Hello, and welcome to the Midwest Genealogy Center's Tell Me a Story program, an initiative to record America's family history in sound. Oral histories are one of the most personal and rewarding ways to preserve family stories. The Tell Me a Story sessions are 45-minute interviews between two people with the assistance of a trained facilitator. Participants will receive a compact disc with the full interview. A copy will be archived at the Midwest Genealogy Center and, with permission, later made available to the public. And now, another story.
Hello, this is Marie Steiner and Danny Steiner, Danny and Marie. I'm doing a Tell Me a Story oral history of Danny Lee Steiner. He was born to Madeline Grace Corbin Woods and John Baptist Steiner. Danny was born June 5, 1947 in Jackson County, Missouri. And I do have some questions for him.
Okay, I'm Dan Steiner, and I'm ready to answer.
Okay. We're going to start with, where did you grow up in Kansas City?
I grew up in what was then called the inner city, which was kind of between Independence and Kansas City, just east of Sheffield Steel. And we moved about every other year because my dad just loved, every house was better than the last one.
Okay. How was your relationship with your parents?
I think very, very good. Mother and dad always made all of us kids feel loved. Working with my father was always a chore, but it was me, not him, I'm sure.
What was your best memory of your childhood?
Oh, probably Christmas, because Mother always made it very special.
Who were your best friends?
I had one named Arville, Kincaid, and the other was Clarence Robinson.
And were both of them neighborhood youths that you grew up with?
Yes, and I still know where both of them are at today.
Okay. What was your earliest memory growing up as a child?
Probably my older brother taking me for a ride in my oldest brother's soapbox derby and allowing me to steer.
Are there any words of wisdom you'd like to pass along to your family?
From me, words of wisdom, those are hard to come by. I'd have to think about that another time.
Okay. What are your proudest of in your life?
The fact that I had the character and persistence to go after the one woman that I loved.
And what is her name?
That's my Marie. And at this time in history, we've been married 40 years.
All right. We're going to go into working. What did you do for a living?
Most of my life, starting when I was about 15, I worked weekends at the Kansas City Star, putting the funny paper together. And then I went off into the service. After that, I came back a little crazy and got jobs here and there and everywhere, but I ended up back at the Star and worked for them for 27 years.
You mentioned you were in the military. Can you tell me a little bit about that?
Yeah, I was in just short of 4 years. I did two tours in the NOM. It was one of those experiences that I wouldn't take $1 million for, but I wouldn't do again for $10 million.
Can you tell me a little bit about what the war was like? Why were you there in Vietnam? It's a different culture altogether.
The war was really kind of like being at the largest crazy house you were ever assigned to. Mm-hmm. If you were committed to a situation where there was nothing that was normal, then you were in combat.
So what were your duties there? What were you classified as doing?
I was an ordnance man.
And what was the responsibilities of an ordnance man?
Mostly assembling ordnance.
So did you have anything to do with the ammo?
Yeah, that's what ordnance is.
Okay, yeah. Just clarification.
Napalm.
Uh-huh.
Bombs, rockets, you know, small arms.
Well, I understand now after all these years the government has finally realized that our boys that went over there, that they weren't recognized when they came home, but now they're 20, 25 years later, they're recognizing that our boys that were exposed to Agent Orange are now coming back and finding out they have all kinds of health issues. Sugar diabetes, birth defects, heart trouble. I think that's some of them. What is your feeling on that?
I think that's probably all true. They used to, Ranch Hand was the organization that sprayed that stuff. And in fact, they sprayed us all the time. It kept the weeds down.
Okay. Let's talk about a little bit about that. Can you tell me about your illness?
Well, yeah, I have heart disease, ischemic heart disease. I don't know what to say about it other than the fact that it changed the second half of my life quite a bit.
Okay. During your service, can you recall times when you were afraid? I know you've made a comment to me that one of the boys, after he got struck, he was up in, I forget what you call it, tower. And then at that point, you finally decided, you always phrase it for me. Do you know the phrase that I'm talking about?
Probably that you don't have to be afraid anymore, because if you're gonna die, you're gonna die.
Right.
There's no use in worrying about it, because he actually got struck by lightning.
Right. That's where I was going with that. That it wasn't.
It wasn't, you know, with all the craziness that was going on.
So at that point, you said you were no longer afraid of dying.
No, that changed everything.
Well, good. What are your strongest memories from your time in the military?
Getting out.
But you did two tours. You went over there, came home, and then you went back again.
Probably the Tet Offensive was very exciting.
Okay.
They tried to overrun us, and they didn't get the job done.
Okay. And I know you had mentioned before that your reason for upping is that you wanted the benefit of being able to go to Germany. Tell me a little bit about that.
Well, I had some grandiose delusions of having rank and in Germany, which at that time in my life would have been a whole lot of fun after having been over there. And rank, after you are over there, is easier to come by. It was easier to come by. Mm-hmm. So I had some delusion that I would have more rank and be in Germany and just have an absolutely beer-drinking fun time.
You had once told me that because of the line of work that you were responsible for, that you had CIA clearance?
Oh, yeah, top secret clearance. Because we also handled nukes if necessary.
And from
Thank
that,
God we didn't have to.
And from that advantage point, you said you were even given the opportunity that you were approached by the CIA to come work for them after you got out of the service. Can you tell me about that?
Well, it wasn't really the CIA. It was the FBI.
Okay.
And I always assumed that they approached me because they had already spent the money on my security clearance.
Okay. How did you meet your wife?
I met her at the same bank where I was working after I got back.
Back from Vietnam?
Yeah. It was one of the many jobs I went through after I got back, cuz like I said earlier, I didn't realize it, but I was a little crazy.
I understand. How did you know she was the one?
Cuz she thought just like I did.
How did you propose?
At Wolco. Oh, it's a spur of the moment.
What were the best times?
Best times for what?
For your relationship. What were the best times? All of the above? None of the above?
Every moment of every day, every since.
All right. What advice do you have for young couples today?
If you think you're carrying your half, you're already in trouble.
Do you have any favorite stories from your marriage or about your wife?
I don't tell them.
Okay. What lesson has work life taught you? We're back to work.
Pride in one's personal duties is never wrong.
Thank you. If you could do anything now, what would you do and why?
I really do not have a bucket list. Whatever the Lord leads me, that's where I'll go.
Do you have any favorite stories from your work life?
A million of them, but they're all rated X.
Okay. Do you have a happiest moment of your life?
Probably my wedding day.
How has your life been different than what you imagined?
I never really imagined I'd be as happy as I have been.
And what contributed that?
My wife.
How would you like to be remembered?
As a good guy.
Do you have any regrets?
Really, no. If there was anything I could change, I would probably have paid more attention in school.
Who has been the biggest influence on your life, and what lessons did that person teach you?
Wow, that's a loaded question. I've had a lot of good teachers.
Well, tell me about them.
Well, I have a brother-in-law named Gary Long, and Gary taught me a lot as far as how to be a man. Mm-hmm. And my mother taught me how to care. And my dad taught me how to work. And my wife taught me how to go to distance.
What are the most important lessons you've learned in life?
Just keep going. Show up. Be there on time.
Okay. What is your ethnic background?
German. On my father's side. Indian and Heinz 57 on my mother's.
Do you know where your mom's family's from and where your dad's family's from?
Well, mother is down around Lake of the Cherokee in Oklahoma. And dad's was from Germany. Mm-hmm. My grandfather came here just before my dad was born. Yeah.
And when was your dad born?
He was born in 09. So okay. My grandfather left Germany shortly before that, because dad was born here.
Okay. And when he got here, where did your grandparents start their family?
You mean in Kansas City?
Yes.
Of course, they came in through New York, but my grandfather lived over at 27th and Madison, which was a totally German neighborhood at that time. Mm-hmm. Which doesn't that section right in here is now the freeway, but that's where they started, along with Zarda Barbecue that lived next door.
And what was the name of the church that your family belonged to there in the neighborhood?
Sacred Heart. Sacred Heart, that was all German neighborhood in those days.
And that church still exists today?
Yes. Yes, it does. Dad Dad went to the school there when he became five, and that's when he learned English because it was World War I, and they wouldn't allow the kids to talk German anymore.
Mm-hmm. And how many brothers and sisters did your father have?
Well, there was a total of seven, but two died in infancy. So I guess there was five of them.
Okay. Do you know their names?
Yes. There was Francis and Mary and Helen and Louis or Louis. And it's not George. Albert. Yeah, Albert. Albert was killed when he was 18. I never met Albert.
How did that happen?
He was delivering groceries, and he put the milk down, got on the elevator, and pushed the button, then reached out to get the milk. But in those days, there was no OSHA. So there was no door on the elevator, and the elevator went up, and he was caught at the top of the door.
Sorry. And your mother, do you know how many children were in her family?
13.
Do you know their names?
Oh, God, no.
Well, see, there was Russell.
Russell and Ralph.
Madeline.
And Madeline, Madeline being my mother. Uh-huh. Let's see, they called him by nicknames.
Cotton.
Cotton and...
Jack.
Jack, he was the youngest. Uh-huh. And...
Was it Patty or Patricia or... No, I can't remember.
I
don't remember.
Alice. Aunt Alice.
What traditions have been passed down to you in the family?
I really do not recall anything that's a pass down.
Okay. Who are your favorite relatives?
Uncle Louie. Uncle Louie, my Uncle Louis was so much fun.
He was your
my dad? My dad's youngest brother.
Okay.
And he worked at the brewery, Muehlbach Brewery, with my grandfather, who was a brewmaster for Muehlbach.
And where was that located? Was that in Kansas City?
Yes, it was down by the city market. It later became Schlitz, and then Schlitz left town.
Okay. Do you remember any of the stories they used to tell you about your family?
Yeah. Grandfather used to go into the cooling room and lock the door. And Louis, you could always tell where he was because he was always cussing. And my dad had to quit because mother got tired of him coming home with too much beer in him.
Well, how'd that happen?
That's because in those days, you could draw off the tap whenever you wanted to.
And still do your job?
As long as you could still do your job.
You could draw.
You were good.
Well, you've told me some other stories about that you've heard from years and years. You seem to be the historian in your family because no one seems to remember these stories as well as you do. They remember bits and parts. Can you tell us a little bit about the stories that told about your grandfather Steiner?
The main story about grandfather was that his father, my great-grandfather, was in fact an officer in the Kaiser's Palace Guard. And so was all the rest of his sons. But my grandfather said, this is not the family business for me. And he left and came to America.
And that's where the story ends. You don't know or heard any more about that or have any kind of documentation to confirm that or deny that?
There was a lady in the neighborhood that knew the Steiners back in Germany and said that, in fact... my great-grandfather was a military guy of some pretty high rank, but she's long gone. So by the time I grew up, she was already gone.
And you tell a story about that, that she tells about, that he was pretty high rank, that when he passed away, there was some pomp and circumstance?
Yeah, it's quite almost processional with the boots in backwards and the horse and all. It was, they made a big deal out of it.
Do you know when your grandfather, Steiner, that came here to America, do you know when he passed away? What did he do for a living when he was here in Kansas City?
He worked for Muehlbach. Well, at that time, Muehlbach had been sold to Schlitz, and he was a brewmaster down there at the brewery. He had retired for a while, but he didn't like retirement, and the brewery took him back. And so he was 71, but he was actually on vacation the day that he passed away.
And where do you know where his home was in Kansas City?
It was at 4500 Olive.
Is that in Kansas City, Missouri?
Yes, it is now.
Okay.
It was very nice in those days, though. Very nice.
Do you have any classic family stories or jokes or songs? I know you told me about a time when you were a little boy that your Uncle Louie would pay you to sing a particular song.
Oh, Mule Train.
Uh-huh.
Uncle Louie liked to pay me to, because there was a song back at that time in the 50s that it was about Mule Train, and I would act like I was playing the guitar and stomping my foot, and he'd give me money to do it.
Are there any jokes that they would tell you that you, kind of resonates with you now, even as an adult? You still remember those little jokes or stories? Is there anything that you'd like to share?
I don't believe I recall at this time.
Okay. Well, I remember a story you told me once about when you were growing up you had mentioned that your father liked to move from house to house because he always felt that the next house was better than the last house. And he always had this dream of being a farmer. And you mentioned as a child that he decided that he wanted to move to the country. Can you tell me about that experience?
Yes, that was the probably the biggest education that a young kid can get firsthand.
How old were you?
I was 10, and we moved to the farm, and it was a rustic farm. It was like stepping back into the 18th century. We had we burnt wood to keep warm. We had a well with a pump, hand pump, and we had an outhouse. We had chickens and hogs and, you know, all that sort of thing. Weekends were spent cutting wood, splitting wood. Chores were going down to the barn and feeding hogs and picking up coal. You know, it was a real education. Some of it was bad or seemed bad, but it was, you know, like watching a hog being butchered is something that most kids never get to see. And it's just quite an ordeal, you know, a huge hog being dressed out. And, of course, there was a lot of fun, too, because you get to raise animals and shoot, you know, dinner, squirrels and rabbits, and you get to see crops come up in the fields. And it was quite an experience.
Is this where you had your favorite pet you talk about? Brownie?
Oh, Brownie, yeah. Brownie was not just a pet. If you weren't family, you better not get out of the car.
He was your protector.
He was a bad boy, but he was perfect with us.
Uh-huh. Tell me about your school there when you were going, you were 10 years old and you had to go to school in the country. What was that like?
Oh, I hated it.
Why?
I hated it. I just couldn't connect. I just couldn't connect with, truthfully, country kids. I don't know why exactly. If we'd have stayed in the country, I'd have probably been a dropout.
Was it a one-room schoolhouse?
No. It was actually pretty modern for its time. That was 57, and it was all on one floor, you know, long hallways, and everybody had their own classroom. It was really pretty upscale.
So how did you get to school? Are your stories one of the ones where you had to walk 6 miles to schoolhouse?
Not in the country. We were the first on the bus and the last off the bus every night.
Who's we?
Well, my sister and I. My sister Mary. She took attendance. And it was a situation where the bus driver would pick up us kids that were way out there. And then as he got closer to town, that's where he picked up most of his busload. So at night, he got rid of most of his busload and then dropped us stragglers off out in the weeds.
Okay. Are there any stories about school when you lived in the country that you want to share? Favorite teacher? Something that you learned in that school besides that, you know, if you had stayed there, you probably wouldn't have graduated? Is there any other memories that you have?
No.
Okay. I'm going to move on to remembering a loved one. What was your relationship to Ralph, Carl Steiner?
Ralph was my oldest brother, and he was like nobody else you ever met.
Well, tell me about Ralph. What made him so different from everyone?
For one thing, he was probably the smartest guy I ever met. And he could read you. He could read people. It took him 5 minutes, and he could almost tell you more about yourself than you could. He had read an entire library on his own before he ever got out of high school. And truthfully, he was probably too smart for his own good. But in the end, it came back to, as I always say, bite him in the butt.
So what was your first memory of Ralph?
Him and his Lucky Strikes. He smoked Luckies. And he used to hide them in an old abandoned car. And he'd always, on his way to school, stop over at the car and get his cigarettes. And that's one of the earliest remembrances of him that I have.
What is your best memory of Ralph?
Oh, there's a lot of good memories of Ralph. Ralph would come to you when you needed to know something about life, and he would tell it to you straight up.
And it seems I remember a book that he gave you because he wanted to make sure that you understood. Can you tell me about this special book?
Yeah, it was a birds and the bees book. Only it wasn't a beat around the bush. It was straight up. And it wasn't, you know, pornography or anything like that. Uh-huh. It was a medical book. He got me a medical book that was perfect for a young 13-year-old to read and understand all areas.
The anatomy of a human.
Yes.
And the how it functions.
And the whole sexual thing. And he also gave me my first cigarette when I was 15. But first, he showed me exactly what was coming out of that cigarette. He had a white handkerchief, uh-huh. And he put it over the cigarette and drew through it. And he says, you see that nasty old yellow stain? He said, that's what's going in your lungs every time you draw one.
So he wanted to be sure you understood.
That I understood it. And then when I was probably, after I was back from the war, and they were doing renovation down on the city market downtown, and there was a restaurant down there called the Red Door. And my grandfather used to eat lunch in there all the time. He'd walk over from the brewery. And he came and got me one day, Ralph did, and took me down there, and we had lunch. He says, I don't think you've ever had lunch here, and you should because your grandfather did all the time. That was, I appreciate that.
What did Ralph mean to you?
What did he mean to me? He was the kind of guy that you looked and expected at any time would become exceptionally rich because he had what it took to do it, but he just couldn't make the connection.
Are you comfortable? Can you talk about Ralph's death? How did he die?
He died alone, and he was a drunk.
What has been the hardest thing about losing him?
Just knowing that he's not out there.
What would you ask Ralph if he were here today?
Were you right?
How do you think Ralph would want to be remembered?
As having been right.
Can you talk about the biggest obstacles Ralph overcame in his life?
Being poor.
Was there anything you and Ralph disagreed about, fought over, or experienced some conflict around?
Nothing. Because Ralph believed that what you wanted was the way it should be.
Let's go back to growing up. Well, we haven't covered religion. Can you tell me about your religious beliefs, spiritual beliefs? What is your religion at this time? And this is September the 29th, 2015.
I'm a Methodist. I'm a Christian. I'm a believer in Jesus Christ. I have read the book and the Bible, and I believe it.
Have you experienced any miracles?
All the time.
The one that kind of stands out with me that you told me about is when you forgave your old boss. Can you tell me about that?
It was nothing that I did. It was just, it just comes to you that it's the right thing to do. And then you feel a great peace of having done it, like as if you'd done something.
What was the most profound spiritual moment of your life? I know you told me that as an adult, I know that in your marriage, your wife was always challenging you and wanted you to be baptized, and that was a constant throughout our marriage. Can you tell me about when you finally decided you wanted to be baptized? Can you tell me that day, the experience that you had?
Yeah, there was a great ice storm, and it was canceled.
Did you give up?
No.
Were you baptized?
Yes.
And what was that event like?
I froze almost to death because someone had killed themselves, and the minister had to go and comfort the family and did not turn the heater on in the baptismal pool. We still went on.
And you've already told me that you do believe in God. Do you believe in the afterlife? What do you think it will be like?
I don't worry about it because we have a good God. We don't have to worry about what it'll be like or not. It'll be up to Him.
When you meet God, what do you want to say to Him?
Don't lock the gate.
You want Him to let you
in? I want Him to let me in.
It has been said that after they pass away, the most important people in our lives live within us. Is there anyone from your past that lives within you?
I don't know.
What does your future hold?
Whatever God decides it is.
If we were to describe yourself now as an adult in comparison to when you were a child, what do you look like? Can you describe that to me?
Bigger?
I understand that. I remember the day we were married and let me back up. I remember the day my parent met your father, and she was pleasantly surprised that he was not 6'2", but he was 5'6".
Six.
Can you tell me about your siblings and how they compare to your dad? Because the only one that was little that I recall is your sister Mary.
Yeah. All those boys are either at 6 foot or more. But, you know, all of my grandfather's brothers were big fellas. And maybe that's why my grandfather said that the military wasn't the family business for him, because he was a short fellow too, about 5'5", 5'6".
He was a small man.
A small man. In fact, he was not only not tall, my dad was a robust, muscled individual, where Grandpa was just a regular guy.
True. I do remember Dad's forearms were pretty good size, and he even after he retired, it seemed like that form never changed. He always seemed to be well-built as far as his torso, but his height was never a comparison to his boys, which were all tall.
Yeah, Dad was. I remember one time when my oldest brother thought that he could whip my dad, and my brother was, I think he was 19 then, and Dad threw him out the screen door.
Did he open the screen door?
Nope. And he landed out on the porch, and that took care of that.
He never challenged your father again?
Nope.
Okay. Can you tell me about your mother's brothers? Were they, what size or stature were they? Were they small build? Because I know Madeline was, I wouldn't consider her an average built woman.
My mother was 5'6". And she had a lot of the Cherokee in her. She was squarely built. And had worked hard all her life, too. That's why my dad still had a lot of muscles, even though he was in his early 70s. He had worked extremely hard all of his life.
But did you ever know any of your mother Madeline's brothers or sisters? Did you meet them later in life?
Yeah, I met one, Uncle Jack, and he looked so much like my mother. It was unbelievable. And they all looked like their mother. So.
And what was their mother's name?
Well, that was Lillian.
Lillian. I'm going to go back to growing up. How would you describe a perfect day when you were young?
Just being outside with the dog.
You enjoy the outside.
Yeah, I did. Still do to a certain degree.
Mm-hmm. What did you think your life would be like when you were older? Did you ever think about that as a child? I know I hear children today, when they ask you how old you are and you tell them their age, their eyes light up like, oh my gosh, that's like forever.
Strangely enough, I truthfully doubted that I would even grow up. It was a dangerous world out there, and we did dangerous things, and I suppose that I'd go out with a grin on my face and say, hey, fellows, watch this.
Do you have any favorite childhood stories?
Childhood stories.
I know you tell me the story about why you don't fish. Do you remember that story?
Yeah, that's a sad story, though. Yeah, I used to love to fish when I guess I was about 9. And we had some friends that had a cabin down at the lake.
What lake is that?
Well, that would be, let's see, Truman.
Truman Lake, okay.
Truman Lake, now. Mm-hmm. So I went down there with them on the weekend, and I fished Friday night, I fished all day Saturday, and I fished all day Sunday until we got ready to leave to come back to Kansas City. When I came in, I had a small boat that I rowed around the lake myself. When I came in, they both my dad and the fellow's cabin that we were at, both laughed because of the size of the hook that I was using to try and catch fish with. I was using worms, and I had a hook that was considerably too big for what I was doing. And it made me so mad that they had waited till they called me in to check to see what I was doing and how I was doing it, that I never went fishing again.
I want to go back to your illness, because I'd like your family to know that this wasn't something that you had control of, that this was something that was left over from the war and the government finding out that Agent Orange exposure affected a lot of our boys over there. I want them to understand why you didn't have a family, why you have this health condition. I know you told me a little bit about your illness, but can you tell me about how long ago it started? You said that you were in Vietnam, you came home. When was it that you came home from Vietnam? What year was that?
That was 68.
Okay. And right after you came home, it wasn't immediately found that our boys were exposed to Agent Orange and all the health issues that could happen to them. This was probably 20, 25 years later when the government realized that.
Yeah. When I had to have bypass surgery, that was 91.
And how old were you at that time?
44.
44 years old. So already you're having open heart surgery, but we're still not understanding why you have this heart condition. This is 1991. Is that correct?
Correct.
Do you think about dying? Are you scared?
Oh, no.
Why? Why are you not afraid to die?
Because we have a good God, and if it hurt, he wouldn't let it happen.
Okay. Do you regret anything?
If I had any regrets at all, it was that I would have participated more in life. I'm happy with what I've done, and I don't think that I've done anything that I would consider bad. But I think it would have been more fun to have participated even more.
Okay. Do you look at your life differently now than before you were diagnosed?
Well, yeah, because I can't do what, I've always had the desire to take a major sailing excursion, maybe sail up and down the West Coast. I would have loved to have sailed up into Alaska. But when you have some of the conditions I have, that's just totally, totally out.
Okay. Do you have any last wishes?
That I live as long as God wants me to.
Now, I understand you like to travel. What are the many places that you have traveled? Can you tell me a little bit about them or the places that you've been?
Oh, I've been to probably 3/4 of the states in the United States.
The mainland.
The mainland, yeah. Hawaii, 18 times. Europe,
How many times have you been to Europe?
Oh, I only went there once.
How long did you go for?
3 weeks.
And what did you see?
Everything.
Did you travel 11 countries in 3 weeks?
That's it.
Would you recommend that?
Not with my wife.
Has this illness changed you? What have you learned?
Irregardless how much exercise you do, you can't always remain healthy.
Is there anything that you'd like to add that I haven't asked you? Let me give you an idea. We've asked you various questions about your future, growing up, where you were born, marriage, working. Would you like to add any more about your work?
No.
Life? Religion?
No.
Your illness? Your family heritage?
No.
Your military time?
No.
Remembering a loved one?
No.
I'd like to go back a bit here on your military service. I know that you had some best friends. In fact, you kept in touch with them over the years. One of them has since passed away, but you're still in communication with the other. So the Vietnam War has been over 40-plus years ago?
Yeah.
So can you tell me about your relationship with your two Air Force buddies that you met over there in Vietnam? What are their names, and are you still in contact with them?
Okay, that would be, his name is Richard Batista, and he's gone now. He lived in New York. He lived in the Queens for many years. And Donald Robertson has lived in L.A. Many, many years. We were the Three Musketeers, and There was a fourth musketeer, Jack Gentle, but he was so young that I always just thought he was a kid. But Jack went on to Officers Candidate School and became a weatherman for Special Ops. So, and then retired. So, we still keep in contact. We still, Donald and his wife, Jackie, vacation with us, as you well know.
Is there anything else that you'd like to share today? Anything that you want to be remembered for? Because I'm thinking of our goddaughter, Liliana Marie Jackson. I want her to be able to listen to this.
I have loved no one more than your Aunt Marie and you. And I love your sister, but you're my goddaughter, and you will always have a special place in my heart forever. I just thought of a little story that I would like to share in regards to Marie and I being Lily's godparents. And that is that I felt I was too old when Lily came along, you know, and in poor health, to be a godfather. And I always felt that the godfather should be more than just an honorary thing that you do for someone. I think if you commit to that, you should be there. So anyway, I felt I was too old. But they were talking about names for Lily. And originally, they were going to name her Madeline. And Madeline was my mother's name. But her mother, Lily's mother, I'm sure did not know that. But she was going to name her Madeline just because she liked the name. Well, the babysitter for her older sister said, "Oh, there's going to be a lot of Madelines because of the doll. You know, I'd find something else." And so, sure enough, they did find something else. They named her Liliana. Well, Lily was my mother's name. What are you going to do? And so I thought I'd let everyone know that it was kind of a miracle, kind of something special. I thought there was something going on there.
Also tell about the day Lily was born from your mother's death.
Lily was born 9 months and 10 days after my mother died. And I don't know if that means anything or not, but it was, everything seemed like it was connected. Mm-hmm. Certainly the names, that was totally, because there was absolutely no way that Lily's mother would have known my grandmother's name.
And who's Lily's mother? What's Lily's mother's name?
Beth Jackson.